Hey, detailers, have you heard about HyperClean? It's an ultra-concentrated line of cleaners. What does that mean? It means since it's not pre-mixed with water, this saves you, the detailer, in shipping costs and allows you to mix it in a 5-gallon cube at only $5 a gallon. If you're looking to bring costs down and profits up, go download the Detail Supply app. We have an exclusive coupon code for our listeners. Use DETAIL15 at checkout and save 15% on all HyperClean products. That's DETAIL15 on the Detail Supply app for 15% off all HyperClean products or at www.hypercleansaves.com.
Hey, y'all, it's Noxie. Thanks for listening to the Detailed Solutions podcast. And now, a little bit more about one of our sponsors. Alex, have you heard about the paint assassins on Facebook?
No, Noxie, what's that?
I'm glad you asked, you wrinkled little booby. Paint assassins was started by a dude named Jason Bruno to where detailers can find the camaraderie that they're looking for without any of the negative trolling bullshit like other Facebook groups. Not only that, but they can compete with their work weekly, monthly, or yearly to win prizes. Oh, dude, and they make sick merchandise, so you always have fresh gear to wear.
Whoa.
Anyway, y'all want to check it out? Again, it's Paint Assassins on Facebook or Instagram. Check it out.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Detail Solutions podcast. A couple of weeks ago, I had the pleasure of being asked to be a guest on the Owner's Pride podcast with Dan. And so I did it. It was a lot of fun. So Dan recorded it. We kind of did a mutual back and forth kind of deal. He asked me some questions. I asked him some of my questions, and he's dropping the episode on the Owner's Pride podcast page. And well, I'm dropping this one here. So have a listen. Hope you guys enjoy it. See you on the other side.
Welcome to the Owner's Pride / Detail Solutions podcast. Today we kind of have a special little duo podcast that we're going to drop at the same time. I have Alex Russell from Detail Solutions Auto Spa and Detail Solutions podcast. How are you doing, Alex?
I'm good, buddy. How you been?
I'm pretty darn good too. You're somebody who I think I've been connected for I have no idea how long to on Facebook. But I don't think that we've ever actually met.
No. And it's actually kind of funny because when you messaged me about doing this, I realized that we're Facebook friends. But a lot of times, to me, I mean, I always tell people I feel like I'm 7 degrees of every detailer in the world because of Facebook. Because if somebody messages me or, you know, friend requests me or, friend, you know, sometimes I'll friend request them because of something. And a lot of times... it doesn't mean that we've ever had communication, but either we've commented on a picture together or I've liked something, some work that they've done or something. So yeah. So nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too. And it's funny, you know, you're no spring chicken either. So, no. We've both likely been doing this for a minute. So it's funny how so many names like I do see. But being involved in the industry for so long, it seems like you would already know everybody.
Right. And well, you know, that's the thing. So realistically, you know, quick background, most of my listeners know my stuff, my story, but you know, quick recap is, you know, back in 1995, I started at the car wash. And started, you know, as the vacuumer, worked my way to the front line, got into the detailing portion of it because I saw that, you know, the detailers at the car wash I worked at were kind of like the gods, you know, like they were the cool kids. They made all the money. They were like, you know, the ones that everybody looked up to. So I wanted to do that and then eventually made my way into management and managed car washes for many years. And it wasn't until the last car wash that I was at, that they sold ownership to Mr. Car Wash, which is a huge giant chain, and Mr. Car Wash doesn't do any detailing. They're primarily kind of like, you know, ride through service. They hardly even do any full service stuff anymore. And so my question at the time was, well, what happens to Alex? Because at the time I was the, my official unofficial title was regional manager of sales and detail between two locations. And Alex didn't want to go back to working 60 plus hours a week managing a car wash. And I knew that's what they were going to do for me or wanted me to do. So I quit. And I didn't quit. I technically got fired. I just didn't come back the next day to get rehired by the new company. And that's when I started Detail Solutions Auto Spa. So that's only been just a little over 5 years now. So technically I haven't been on this side of the business for as long as I've been in the, I guess, you know, car washing industry.
Which is probably a huge, and when I say huge, I mean big, large, grande advantage for you. Because, and I was going to go somewhere else, but what you just said really struck a note. A lot of the guys that get into detailing at an early age don't have the business background. And coming from management of a car wash, you probably had so much of that structure built into your brain.
I did for the most part. You know, the biggest thing was, thankfully, the car wash that I managed for majority of my years was here in Lake Mary, Florida, which is considered the golf capital of the world, believe it or not. We have a lot of golfers that live here. There's a million golf courses, it seems like. So the owners came from like that country club atmosphere. So they wanted the car wash to have that country club atmosphere. So, you know, anybody who is management or supervisors or things like that either wore, you know, collared polos or button ups. You know, we had nicer uniforms. So that taught me a lot on, you know, how to be, you know, present myself. And not just kind of be like, you know, what people think a car washer is or a detailer is, so to speak. Yes, you know, being able to run the day-to-days, open and close, and time management and scheduling and all that stuff, I think helps a lot. But at the same time, because it's just me, you know, and majority of the work that I'm doing is paint corrections and coating, so I've got the vehicle for 3 or 4 days. I tend to slack off every now and then. But too, I'm not, you know, like you said, we've been in this business for a while and I can't go at it like some of these 20-year-olds, you know, that, you know, and that's the biggest thing I've always talked about on my podcast is I don't, the 20-year-olds and even the 30-year-olds, like they need to slow down. Like this working, you know, till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and going home and getting, you know, very little rest and then back at it again, you're going to kill yourself. You know, you're going to burn out so fast. And for me, it's all about go in and do what I've got to do and then get home to be with the wife and kid.
You know, it seemed to me like when I started my own business, I came from waiting tables prior to that and playing music. So it was customer service for sure.
Right.
But you think when you start your own business, oh, I'm going to take time off whenever I want. I'm going to, you know, take vacations. But in reality, that 60 hours a week that you were working at the car wash turns into 80 hours a week. And not only that, it turns into you're sitting down to watch television at the end of the night. And then you think, oh, I didn't wipe those water spots from the bottom of the grill, like a place where the customer never even would see. I guess what I'm saying is it just really overtakes you.
It does. And you know, the first couple of years, I was very fortunate, I guess, when I first left the car wash. We did have a little used car dealership that we did details for. And so when I left, they stayed with me because they knew the car wash wasn't going to do it anymore. And they stayed with me to the point where they had a 30,000 square foot building. They just said, look, to make it easier on us, just rent space from us. That way we don't have to drive cars wherever. So I was fortunate enough, like I had a place, I had work the very next day that, you know, that I left the car wash and was able to have work, so to speak. Most people don't get that. They start, but it was still a struggle. I mean, that was my one big account. And it's not like I made, you know, tons of money from them. So in the beginning, yes, that, you know, I was working way more hours, you know, detailing and Saturdays and sometimes Sundays and, you know, and not getting home until a little bit later. But thankfully now, you know, at around the 3.5-4 year mark when our ceramics really started picking up, because I left them at like around the year and a half, two year mark and then almost kind of had to start over again, so to speak. Because they were such a big client base for me. I didn't have a lot of retail. But now we've gotten good word of mouth. I get a lot of really good clients and customers that keep me busy with the bigger work that now I can, you know, work on one car and take 3 days to do it. And that's pretty much all I really need to do for the whole week. And I can make enough money off of that, you know, to live off of pretty comfortably. I mean, we have very low overhead. Our shop space is real small and it's like stupid money a month, you know, like cheap. So it's not like we're paying out a whole lot. And it just makes it easy to do that.
So you said you started that car wash in 1995. And if
I started working at it. Yeah.
Get my abacus and ching, ching, ching. Think about your age and the year of that. Was that your first job? Have you always been in cars?
No, that was not my first job. My first job actually was when I was 17, working at Albertsons. And then I had a real bad car accident, where I broke my neck, broke collarbone, tore ribs from cartilage, dislocated shoulders. I mean, it was a pretty bad one. So I never went back to work, at Albertsons, cause I was out of work for about a year. And then the girl that I was dating at the time, her dad had a restaurant. I started working for him, which was a really good job, until we broke up. And even though we worked opposite shifts,
and the job sucked.
Right. Even though she worked the nighttime, I worked the morning because I helped her dad with the food prep, and I was like, I gotta get out. And he was begging me, like, please, like, you're like, you know, you can leave before she gets here. Like he loved me. He wanted me to stay, and I said, nah. And at the time, I was kind of into like car stereos and stuff because, again, this was like, you know, 90, 94, 95, whatever. And so one of my buddies in the car stereo business managed the car wash. And he's like, come work for me. And I'm like, just like that? And he goes, just like that. I'm the manager. I do what I want. So like 2 days later, I'm working at the car wash. I didn't know anything about washing cars at the time. I didn't really know about waxing and compounds and polishing, and you know, we called it buff and waxes back then.
In 95, they were just using slinging rotaries, right?
Yeah. You know, I mean, that's pretty much how I learned. I mean, I learned
clear coat was new. It was a new technology.
Yeah. You know, I learned by my manager going, well, here's what you don't do, and put a rotary on some rubber trim and just cranked it up and burn the rubber seals around a window. And he goes, that's what you don't do. And I'm like, you know, like I was almost kind of scared shitless, so to speak. Sorry for my language. But you know, ended up getting pretty good at it. At least I felt I was, you know, but this paint correction style versus the buff and wax to me is so much more to try to grasp and understand because it's so, you know, like you know, everybody talks about soft paint and hard paint and this and that. And, you know, and back then it was like, whatever, throw a rotary on it, put something that's got a lot of fillers and slap some wax on it and she's good to go.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's, but yeah, that wasn't my first job. The car wash was my third job.
Okay. So how about this? Have you taken any like classes or trainings or anything in your time? Because you came from one area where you were doing the selling the work, then doing the work, then running the other people doing the work to doing your own work.
Yeah. So as far as, you know, training for this, I am a proud graduate of Greg Masterson's Chemical Guys YouTube videos school. What's up, Greg? I mean, that's kind of how I felt like that, you know, everybody kind of clowns on Greg or whatever. And, but honestly, when, you know, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, when I was starting this, he was really the only one that was doing YouTube videos for the most part on how to do things. I did, some schooling at MTE or, well, I don't know if it's schooling, but I took some classes at MTE, you know, different things, marketing and social media. I took a couple of, Mike Phillips's classes. Other than that, you know, I did, before the car wash sold, I actually was able to talk the manager or the owner into letting us get into paint correction style detailing. I told him, you know, listen, why do we have to be 1970s car wash? You know, everything's changing. We could be doing this. So we actually had, Todd Helm from, from Rupes actually come down and so he gave me some training on, you know, actually how to use the Rupes Bigfoot machines and things like that. So I got a little bit of training from him. Other than that, it's been, you know, kind of the groups, on Facebook. If I have a question or I have an issue, like, hey, how do I do this? Or how do I do that? I've always been a big, I say it all the time, you know, it doesn't take a lot to go back and forth and up and down and until the swirls and scratches go away. I know that there's a little bit more to it than that. And
with these 21 millimeter long throw polishers and the polishes and compounds now, it just takes patience. I mean,
right. Sometimes you got to switch out the pad, go a little bit heavier on the pad or a little bit less or chemicals or whatever. But yeah, you know, I always say like, you know, come on, you know, like anybody can do this literally. And I think it shows by the industry because there's so many people get into it every day. But yeah, I haven't done, you know, any kind of full on training. I as much as I'd like to, I don't know how much I would really gain for that. And I'm not saying that because I know a lot, but I don't do good when somebody else is watching me. Like if another detailer is watching me, like I get in my head too much. Like, am I doing this right? Am I taking too long?
Right. What are they thinking, you know, about me or whatever?
Right. Right. Exactly. So for me, it's just better for me to do it the way I'm doing it, ask questions, apply that to how I'm doing it. And somebody might come on here and tell me that I'm just an absolute idiot for thinking that way. But, but honestly, I feel like I would be the one in the back of the class. It would be too, because that's how I am. I'm very introvert for the most part.
Except for you do a podcast.
I do a podcast, and I think that's what's helping me be a little extroverted. You know, but yeah, I mean, like in a classroom setting, I would probably be the guy in the back. I'd probably be the one that wouldn't raise his head. Would be the last person to. You know, get up and grab the bull by the horns and do it. So
I know what
not
you
yet,
mean.
Not yet. I mean, I, you know, I'd like to, things get back to normal. I'd really like to, you know, I'd really like to go do some training with my good old pal, Aaron Knox, you know, and learn from him a little bit. David Patterson with Lake Countries started the Gloss University thing now, and they're doing some really cool stuff. I wouldn't mind doing something like that. It would have to be something where I think I would really learn something from versus, you know,
I've been on both sides of it, mostly on the side where, you know, the teaching side of it from my last job and then from this one. What I always find is people are like moths to a flame. to grab a buffer in their hand and do what they already pretty much know how to do. Like you said, it's not magic. If you have patience and you use the right tools, whoever the manufacturer of them is recommends that you use them, you're probably going to have pretty good luck. Where everybody seems to be lacking is on the business side. And again, I think that's because it's such an easy entry into this business. But the whole running a business part and the sales and the marketing and being able to take that next step and bring people in when it's time to grow.
Right.
And how to handle yourself properly on social media. Like, there's so many of these things that are not putting something and wiping off of a car that I think that people really, really miss. And I'll tell you, when I started detailing, there was no Facebook. Like, there wasn't even a Facebook at that time. We had a thing called Mobile Works, and it was a BBS forum thing, I think is what it was called. Some bulletin board something. There was no Facebook, which it just blows me away. The hardest part for me to start my detailing business was I had to get a cell phone. And I was like, I do not want a cell phone. I had to sign a 2-year contract. So my whole problem was I did not think I wanted or needed a cell phone. And I didn't want to sign a 2-year contract to make that commitment, which is really funny because I can't. If you don't know where your phone is for like 1 minute now, you're like,
Exactly. I mean, it's crazy how, you know, I get the stupid alerts on my phone that tell me how much my usage is every day. And at this point, I don't even care anymore because I know, like, when I'm on it, realistically, to me, it's still work or it's still business because I'm in the groups. And if I'm not clowning around, you know, about being better than Aaron Knox or things of that nature, you know, it's looking at other things, what other people are doing, what did they use, you know, what do they say, you know, and to me, it's all just gaining information. It might not seem like much, but then when I'm in the shop and I'm having an issue and I'm like, hang on a second, like, I remember, you know, like, I got to dig deep in the files of my brain and go, yeah, I remember on Facebook, somebody had this problem and they said to try this. And so, you know, even when I'm sitting on the couch watching TV and I'm just aimlessly scrolling through Facebook, I feel like I'm still working, so to speak, you know, by trying to learn. But yeah, I mean, you know, so many people get into this industry because they think it's easy and it's quick money and, you know, they're going to do $1,000 paint corrections and coatings and whatever. But if they can't run it, and they can't manage it, they're gone in no time. Yeah. So you're absolutely right. And that's what I think is kind of a good thing, I guess, you know, with Rennie, because Rennie does the business classes and teaches you how to, you know, run a business and keep a business profitable. And that's something that probably a lot of people should look into. Even if it's not Rennie, you know, just something.
We've, for our network of people, we've implemented a really cool, business coaching program, which is really awesome. But so you leave the car wash, you start your business, you mold that thing to be coatings and polishing, which is the best money.
Yep,
totally understandable. Where did the podcast come from? And I ask because, you know, there's a story of where it comes from and how it started and where that idea came.
So the podcast was, you know, I've always thought about doing a podcast. You know, like, me and my buddies would sit around the backyard and razz on each other, and I'm like, you know, like Seinfeld, like, this is an episode, you know, like, we should do a podcast, like, of us just razzing each other and talking trash and whatever. And you know, it's always been one of those things, like, you know, I'd like to do, but I never think of something I would want to do. So let's see, I guess it was maybe May-ish of 2020, I started thinking about it, for detailing, and I was kind of thinking like, okay, well, what do I want to do? Because I'm not the best teacher in the world, and I can't. It's hard for me to listen when I listen to podcasts. It's hard for me to listen or even watch YouTube videos of people trying to show you their techniques or train you like what they're doing, because everybody has a different way of doing it, right? I said it in one of my podcasts. There's a million ways to skin the cat. You know, we don't all have to do it the same way. As long as the end result is a shiny car, client's happy, who cares how you did it, where you got there, the other detailers in, you know, the forums or the groups or whatever telling you did it wrong. Like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So I thought, like, okay, so I'm in this amazing group, Pain Assassins. I'm in some of these other groups that are equally as amazing with just guys and girls that are doing phenomenal work, and they inspire me and to do better myself, or I admire them for their work. I look up to them. So I thought, like, hey, you know, maybe if I do a podcast, it'd be easier to kind of talk to people versus, you know, the, as the saying goes, slide into the DMs, you know, hey, do you want to be my friend? You know, I like your work kind of deal. So that was kind of the idea, and I tossed it around for a month or so, and finally I was talking with Jason Bruno with Pain Assassins one day, and I said, hey man, listen, you know, I'm really thinking about doing this thing, podcast, interview style, what do you think? And he's like, dude, I love it. He's like, there's not really anything like that. I think it's a great idea. So I said, okay. I said, I'm just thinking about it. You know, and I tossed the idea around a little bit more. I started looking into, you know, podcasting hosting sites and things like that. So I stumbled across Anchor, which is a free one. And because I really didn't want to spend any money on it. Like, I didn't know if anybody would listen to the first episode, let alone multiple episodes, right? So, So I thought to myself, like, okay, so I came up with five people that I really wanted to talk to, that I looked up to, I thought did phenomenal work. And I said, okay, I'll do five episodes. If it fails, it fails. I didn't spend any money on this. And if it does good, I'll do another five episodes. So I reached out to Jason and I said, hey man, I'm going to do it, but I want you to be my first guest because you'll be my security blanket. I already know Jason. We talk on a daily basis. So it was hard for me to ask him questions to get to know him.
Right.
You know, but I did. I came up with my questions, even though I knew most of them. And it was great. I had a blast. He had a blast. It got a few listens. So I did the second one and kind of went, and I got to five, and the episodes were kind of getting listens, you know, 10, 15, you know, I thought that was great, 'cause I didn't think I'd get one person listening to them. so then I started working on like my next five, and then I got the idea, and actually I don't know, maybe Jason mentioned it to me or something, about doing a topic. Instead of just being all interviews, have a topic and bring some people on. And that was kind of my other thing. I think that's where the idea came from. The other thing was, like, I wanted my guests to kind of not be the quote unquote big name celebrity detailers, right? So not Rennie Doyle, not Jason Rose, not, you know, whoever, all the big people. I wanted it to be the guys and the girls that are on the level of everybody, you know, get them some recognition, meet them, because they're the ones that I deal with in these groups on a daily basis. It came up like, well, you should get big name people at least to draw some attention. So that's kind of where the topic idea came from. I said, okay, well, listen, every 10th episode, I'll do a topic. And on the topic episode, I'll get some of these quote unquote big names to come on, and that'll be kind of like the big draw. So the first season, episode 10, was, and I figured I would be, episode 10 would be the end of the season. I know some people run, you know, 100 episodes in a season or whatever.
I don't even know anything about this season. I just keep making another one every Tuesday.
Yeah. Well, and some people do and some people don't, but I know some, you know, some people call them seasons or whatever, and they break them up into groups, so to speak. So I said, well, 10's going to be my group. And so for the 10th episode, I wanted to do an episode on trainings. So I called it trainings, the good, the bad, and the ugly or whatever. And so what I did was I reached out to Levi Gates from the Rag Company, because he does a lot of training. I reached out to David Patterson from Lake Country Pads, and because he does a lot of trainings. And then I reached out with Aaron Knox, because again, he does a lot of stuff with CarPro and KXK and whatnot. So they were all about it, ready to go. And I was like, oh man, that's awesome. And so we had Levi and David on. Aaron unfortunately had to excuse himself right before. But we had a good hour-ish podcast about trainings, you know, like what to look for when you're thinking about a training, or, you know, how should you go about going to a training, you know, things like that. And then I you know, was getting a lot of people telling me like, hey, I really like the podcast. I really, you know, I'll be on it. I'll be on it if you need somebody. And I was like, okay, well, I'm setting up season two. Like, I'll pick people. So we started rolling with season two. Season two, I decided to kind of go international a little bit. So right out of the gate, I reached out to Esme, the detailing girl from the Netherlands, who's huge following on Instagram, more so I think than on Facebook. And she was awesome to talk to. And she actually, because of her following on Instagram, she posted a lot about the link and everything. Her episode blew up. Her episode's sitting at like 320 plus listens right now. Whereas the average listen for me is about 55, 60, an episode. So she was huge. I also talked with Pam Schwartz up in Canada. I talked with, Chris Kennedy over in Scotland. So I tried to like have it not just be people here in the US.
Mm-hmm.
Like I tried to go internationally with it, so to speak, because we were getting listens from internationally.
I did one at my last job, where I talked to our Russian distributor and I used a translator. So there was somebody in the middle in Russia, and right. I would ask the question, he'd say it in Russian, then he'd repeat it back, which kind of made nice. It go a little slow, but it was right. Legit.
Yeah, no, that's cool. That's cool. Yeah. Yeah. There was no collusion or anything with that.
It was legit. We just talked about detailing. Well, where do you see your podcast going? Like, so you got, you're here now. Is this like passion for the rest of your life and you're going to keep trying to grow a show? I mean, I absolutely love, it's one of my favorite things that I get to do.
So yeah, you know, I don't know, you know, I kind of take it episode at a time because I am, you know, when an episode crosses that 50 listen mark, I'm just like, wow, you know, because it wasn't too long ago that I was only getting, you know, 20 listens, 30 listens. I mean, shoot, just in the last week, my average listeners on my analytics went from 37 to 55. Or no, I'm sorry, about the last 2 weeks, went from 37 to 55. That's a huge jump in 2 weeks. So I always tell people, you know, I'll keep doing it as long as it's fun for me and people want it. You know, the minute that the listenership starts going down or people don't like it anymore, then I'll pull the plug on it because I'm not going to just keep doing it because
beating your head in the wall.
Right, right. And at the same time, if it's not fun for me to do anymore, I'm not going to put people through that just because they want to hear it kind of deal. So right now the plan is we're going to start recording season three. This Friday night, all my episodes drop, usually Sunday at 6 PM, unless there's scheduling conflicts or things of that nature that sometimes I have to push it a day or so. But I always try to record on Friday or Saturday night. It gives me a little bit of time to kind of listen to it myself. Because I don't know how you are when you do a podcast, but when I'm doing it and I'm asking the questions, you know, I'm trying to think of my next question, concentrate on time. You know, there's a lot going on that sometimes I don't hear what the person says or fully understand it. So I'll piece it together and I'll listen to it the next day and make sure that it sounds good, or if I need to go back and edit something or cut something. And then I drop it. So we're getting ready to start that. Record episode one of season three on Friday. The What's On Your Mind that I do with Jason Bruno is more of just a, I guess like a campfire conversation kind of podcast. That one, there's no time limit to it. We've gone hour and a half to over 2 hours. We bring a guest on and we just kind of talk about whatever. Sometimes it's detailing, sometimes it's not, sometimes it's just life. Because I did have some people that said, hey, you know, I love the podcast, but I wish it was a little bit longer. Because I'm like you, I try to stick at that 45 minute hour mark, because I feel like that's the sweet spot. But some people, when they're listening at work, they really want longer. So that's kind of where the What's On Your Mind comes in. And that one's once, maybe twice a month, we'll do that one. So, you know, I want to do that. I do have plans maybe in season four, you know, that I might have to start reaching into those bigger names.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because if I do want to grow it and I do want to get more listeners, you know, I do have to do that. So, yeah.
And you know, one of the reasons why I pull you into here is like there is plenty of time in people's life for more than one podcast. Like, you know, I think that all of these podcasts that are, you know, for people in our industry are completely relevant, and you should listen. You're going to catch a lot of the stuff's going to be very similar, but you're going to get a little bit of a different angle at it. And do you ever find it's kind of weird, like, because you do a podcast and people listen to it, and you'll meet somebody or talk to somebody on the telephone who's listened to it, and they like, it's like they know you already. And I would imagine it's the same. Like, I listen to Bloomberg Radio, and like, I feel like I know those people if I ever saw them. But it's really funny.
I don't know that people feel like they know me from the podcast. I think people feel like they know me from the relationship that I have with Aaron Knox, and how we always kind of have that back and forth banter. You know, it was referred to last year, I think, for the 2019 year was when we kind of started off kind of bickering back and forth with each other. And just so for your listeners know, we actually are pretty good friends, but you wouldn't think that seeing some of our Facebook posts. But we're
that's
really,
just called busting really, balls.
Yeah, but we're pretty good friends. But yeah, it's funny because somebody mentioned in the group last year because the back and forth kind of started in 2019 that it was the best bromance of 2019 or the summer of the best bromance of the summer of 2019 or something. But no, I kind of get that. And you know, and so I always tell everybody I'm going to ride Aaron Knox's coattails until I can't ride him anymore. Because at MTE in 2020, you know, so many people were MTE Orlando. So many people were grabbing me and wanted to talk to me because of like that, you know, social media presence that I had because of Aaron Knox. You know, not just detailers, like people in the booths, like that worked for these companies were like pulling me into booths or, you know, it's actually kind of funny. David Patterson, who is, you know, huge in the industry, I think, you know, at least to me, he waited all the way till Sunday and I was trying to leave and he grabbed me and he's like, hey, I've been trying to get you all weekend, but you're every time I turn around, somebody's talking to you. And I'm like, dude, it's just like, you could have grabbed me at any time. Like you're you, I'm me, you know, kind of thing. But like that I feel like more people kind of know me from that than they do from the podcast. I think the podcast is, you know, again, it's growing a little bit more and it's, you know, getting some recognition where other people are reaching out to me and telling me I'm doing a good job, or maybe they're commenting more on my posts or, you know, things like that, because of the podcast. But I don't think anybody feels that way yet from the podcast. I think I still got a little bit more to go.
Oh, it's coming. It's a coming.
Yeah. It's you know, if it gets there, cool.
It's coming.
Yeah.
You just consistency is what it's all about. So you just keep punching through, keep your shows coming out the same day, you know. Don't get too mired down in the muck of, oh, this show only had X amount of downloads. Just
I don't, because I know I'm gonna have certain guests that maybe aren't as popular or aren't as well known, that they might not get as many as the person, the guy or girl who is a little bit more well known in the industry, and they're going to get a little bit more. I mean, shoot, Esme, for example, 325, 320, 326. I'm looking at it right now. You know, my next closest episode is the very first one I did with Jason Bruno, sitting at 102. That was, you know, almost a full month or so of listens before Esme's episode even hit, and realistically it only took maybe, I think, 2 weeks for her episode to get into the 300s. So yeah, no, I know it's going to be, you know, ups and downs. And again, that's where, you know, it's nice to see those numbers climb, but at the same time, like, as long as I had fun, as long as the guests had fun, to me, that's the most important part. I hope the people listening have fun with it and enjoy it. But if not, you know what? There's next week's episode, and hopefully they'll like next week's episode.
Yeah. So I know we're going to kind of flip it a little bit here and, and turn the tables, but I'll tell you, mine is for company. And, you know, we're only a year out of the shoot, but we're had really good growth for the first year. It's pretty amazing. And they are pushing to, they want this one to go. They want it to go.
That's good.
Yeah. So it's
yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty exciting.
At least you got a little bit behind you, you know. Me, it's, okay, shoot, I got to take some time away from the wife and kid and try to plan this out and go for it. But
I always tell my guests when they're like, when do you want to record? And I'm like, I get paid for this, so
yeah,
I'm pretty flexible. When do you want to record?
Right. Yeah, that's pretty much what you told me. So to flip it around, I'm going to hit you with the way that I start my podcast. So how, when, and where did you get started in detailing?
I was about 35 years old. I was a musician, and I toured all over the southwestern United States, California, Colorado, New Mexico, Arizona. And my band moved to, well, I'm back up a little bit, crazy in my 20s. Went to rehab for the second time when I was 29. Drinking, I was a big juicer. Lived in a halfway house for 6 months. I was all the way down to homeless. I kind of lost everything. Then I started to build myself back up, got back into the band that I was in. We moved to California. I was waiting tables, which is what I did for work when I wasn't being fired from those from waiting tables. Right. And I was like 35, and I did not want to go into restaurant management because it's really just glorified babysitting, and I just could not see myself being happy working 60, 70, 80 hours doing that. And I had bought a new truck, and my buddy's next door neighbor had a detailing business here in San Diego, and he offered to put a paint sealant on it for me. I watched him do it, and I thought, man, I've always been kind of a neat Nick, and I like cleaning stuff, and I like cars. So he let me ride along with him for 2 days and took me to do a couple jobs, and I had $1,100 saved up, and I had a pickup truck. He took me to the Auto Beauty Supply store. I spent my $1,100. I got a little generator with a lawnmower engine, a 55-gallon drum water tank that I strapped into the back of my truck, and I was off and running. So Thursdays and Fridays, because I made the schedule at my work, I started working at a bank parking lot. And it was a few banks, and I filled those days up. And then I just slowly but surely, over about a year and a half, would pick up more clients, and I'd work less at my restaurant until I was down to 1 day a week. And they were like, okay, you can go do your own thing.
Nice. So what instrument did you play?
percussion, congas, bongos, timbales, bells, shakers, auxiliary percussion, and turntables and samplers and stuff, but mostly percussion.
So, how did you join Owner's Pride?
So, I had had my own detailing business for 12, 13 years in San Diego, and I was working for another company where I kind of had worked my way up from consultant to regional manager to vice president of business development. And my cheese had been moved, to be honest. That's the, you know, the best way to say it. I think things, they just weren't focused on growth, and business development is a fancy word for sales, really. And I had to go find my cheese. And these guys had been customers of mine, and they had a detail shop in Omaha, Nebraska. And I'd been out there and done trainings for them and stuff. And they had had, they were building their business, and they were moving from just being a detail shop to being a chemical supplier. And they had some pretty big connections, and they actually tapped me and brought me on board, which is maybe one of the best things that's ever happened in my life, to tell you the truth.
Listen, that sometimes that's the way it works. You know, I look back and you know, I think every day for the last 5+ years now that my car wash owner sold the car wash because
forced your hand.
It ended up being the best thing for me to start my own business. It's so much more free time and you know, time with the family and things like that.
And I will say, I'm always very cognizant and very aware, and admit that without working with my last company and without Dr. Gadusi giving me my titles and the connections that I was able to make and developing me, I wouldn't be where I am now.
No, you know, I'm one of those people that I'm a firm believer in and fate, so to speak. You know, everything kind of timelines up. It was, you were meant to do this, to do that, to do that. You know, and so I feel that, you know, all my time in the car wash just was leading me to being able to do this kind of at the end, and not, I guess, not end of my career, but later in my career, where I could still make decent money, but not have to work as much or be as responsible, you know, instead of being responsible for, you know, 40, 50, whatever employees and $1 million a year business and all this stuff. Like, I'm just responsible for making sure I bring home enough money every week that the wife doesn't kick me out of the house. So that's a good role. A good way to look at it. So what's your role at Owner's Pride?
Vice President of Business Development. So work on some loftier sales type of stuff. You know, again, it's a fancy name for sales, but help put the program together and, you know, work with the team of the owners directly to build a business. And they've really come out of the chute just kicking, especially to launch a company 3 weeks before the whole, you know, world shuts down and there's a global pandemic. Terrifying as that was when that happened, we've had exponential growth, and, you know, having all of that growth, that has sparked the powers that be to really put a push behind it.
Right. And I'll tell you what, I almost want to say COVID has been probably the best thing for this industry. I was way busier. Well, not way busier, but I was busier last year than the year before. And honestly, it was kind of crazy. Like, I had a slow start off to the beginning of 2020, but the minute that, you know, in like March, the minute that they were, you know, shutdowns and this and that and blah, 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 that's when everything kind of skyrocketed, you know, or took off for me for the rest of the year. Even to the point to where my business typically in August, back to school, like from back to school to the end of the year is kind of like, you know, we're on the downside. Like, we're crazy busy summertime. But that's the downside. And we didn't have that downside at the end of 2020. And now starting off in 2021, I'm already busier in 2021 January than I was last year January. So I always tell people, like, hey, COVID can kind of stick around if it stays busy like this. So
with detailing itself, like, in the 2008, the financial downturn, I bought a house that year.
Right.
You know, you align yourself with the proper clients. You don't skip a beat. The people who were doing the $20, $15 car washes, they probably got clobbered. People who are selling to the upper echelon.
Yep. And that's the one thing I always kind of talk about, you know, especially with, a new administration coming in that typically raises taxes and things like that, and the economy drops a little bit and whatnot. I always tell people that I'm not that worried about it because my clients are going to be okay in whatever economy. And just like what you said, I'm not catering to the people that are looking for that $20 car wash anyways. Like, you know, go to the car wash if you want a $20 car wash. I'm not a car washer. I'm a detailer. I do have clients that I take care of on a maintenance style deal. Mm. And
that was my bread and butter.
And I will do, I will do a car wash style hand wash for them, but it's only because their cars have been coated, by me, and it's easy for me to do and it's quick for me to do. But other than that, I try to stay away from it. How did you get into podcasting, and how long have you been doing it?
So my last company, I was in a manager meeting, and I had just gone on to Jimbo's podcast. It was the first time I'd ever been on one. And in my manager meeting, I said, hey, we should have a podcast. And then my boss at that company said, and then you're in charge of a podcast. So nice. I had to figure out, you know, with no clue how to record it, what to record it on, what equipment. I mean, I already, being a musician, I already knew some stuff about recording, but, you know, I just had to put my nose to the grindstone and figure it out. And I think I put out at, there at the Optimum Synergy podcast, the late, 142 episodes, I believe. And I just published number 43 for the Owner's Pride podcast.
Nice. Now, with both of them, did you have a, like, specific format kind of deal? So, like, I know I started, and I told you, I like to start at the beginning. So I did listen to your first episode with the Owner's Pride podcast. But in so scrolling, I noticed that not only do you have some interview style things, you do also have like some
panel,
You know, like a tips and tricks or things like that. So do you just try to mix it up, or do you?
I do. So really, my idea is to try to make something that's entertaining and educational. And kind of just a spot where small businesses, you know, again, where they're going to get something out of it, but where they're comfortable putting it on and listening to it and just kind of have that feeling when they're polishing a car that they're, that they can, you know, slam on some headphones and listen to it. For the longest time, I was completely freestyle. You know, I was that guy who was like, oh, I don't need to use anything. I'll just have a conversation. But as I've gone forward, I've kind of realized over the past just couple months, really, that if you have a little bit more structure to it and you do a little bit of research on the guests that you're having on, it keeps everything a bit more coherent. And there's a reason that they make movies like they make movies.
And so when you're doing a podcast and you have somebody on, and I guess maybe I know the answer to this because it didn't happen to me. Do you feed the guests ahead of time topic issues, questions you're going to ask them, things of that nature? Or is it strictly you've got your outline and you're just going to hit them with it?
So what I've found that is kind of helpful is to ask the guest preemptively, like, what are some points that they want to hit? Because there's going to be a few things that they're going to catch that are that they're really passionate about that I might miss. And so right. they'll give me just a few of those, and then I make an outline, and I pretty much just stick to the outline. If it starts to get too far off, I try to, you know, bring it back to where I need right. it to go.
I gotcha. So I'm going to ask you a couple of questions that I pretty much ask everybody, because I think they're I think they make you think a little bit, and I like to kind of see where people go. So my first question out of these ones is, who is somebody that you would love to sit down with for an hour and pick their brain? It's kind of the typical dinner party question or whatever, you know, who would you have at your dinner party? This one, I tell everybody pretty much like it's asked everywhere else, dead or alive. And it does not have to be detailing oriented if you want to sit down with somebody who's not a detailer. I'm curious.
Probably Warren Buffett.
Good choice.
Yeah. My investing style is kind of, you know, after him, you find right. good companies and invest in them for the long haul and reinvest your dividends.
Right. No, that's good. That's a good one. What are your goals for 2021, whether it be with Owner's Pride or with the podcast?
Kind of one in the same. And whatever I do throughout my life, whether it was when I wrestled in high school, whether it was when I was a drunk in my 20s, when I played music, when I had a detailing business, I'm full in.
Right.
Both feet all the way in. I'm almost, you know, one of those people who has a sickness where I like to work. I like what I do. Every day I wake up, I'm excited to get right. back on it. When it's the weekend, I feel a little bit bummed that the business world's closing down a little bit for a couple days.
Right.
I do not feel beat up from my job. I absolutely love it. And my goal is to help grow this company into a very recognizable worldwide brand.
Right. And I think that's one of the things that we as detailers can say is I've never met a detailer who, you know, got up every day and was just like, you know, I got to go in and work on this car today, you know, kind of thing. I mean, like, we're exactly what you said. We're the type of people when we're not in the shop or we're taking a day off, you know, you're like, you know, you're kind of like Dave Chappelle, you know, hey, you guys got any compounding? You know, like you're cracking out for it, you know, like I just need to touch it for a couple of minutes, you know? So yeah, I mean, you know, it's good to hear that you, even though maybe you're not detailing as regularly, you're as driven by it as, you know, everybody always is.
This is my hedgehog concept for sure, you know?
Right. I definitely think, you know, it was mentioned to me before, and I think it is, I think it's very true, is that, you know, we as detailers are artists in some way, shape, or form. Just because we're not putting pen to paper, ink on a or paint on a canvas, the paint is our canvas. Our buffer, our polisher, or whatever is our brush. And we are, so to speak, you know, doing artwork. We're making things pretty and things like that. And I think, you know, artists are very driven like that. They're whether you're a musician like you, a poet, you know, an actual, you know, a painter, a you know, somebody who draws, they're doing it all the time because they have that passion for it. And I think that's truly, you know, defines the detail industry for a big majority of it. I'm sure there are some people that are just like, oh, I can make a bunch of money doing this. And they are just kind of doing it for paychecks and, you yeah. know.
This is my passion. I tell you what, I get to live vicariously through all of the detailers that we work with and help. Like every time I always say your success is my success, and so true. I mean, people, they reach new goals, they get to the next rung, and I feel it like it's mine.
And
it's awesome.
No, that's good. So this one's a funny one I've kind of added. It's kind of thrown some people off. What's a detailing pet peeve? What do you see people doing in detailing that you're just like, you know, you want to wring them by the neck? Or
honestly, you know? it's the lack of focus on the business side. And I was probably the exact same way, where, you know, you worry about stuff that a customer really will never worry about. You maybe one out of every 200 customers would. But to actually turn it to a business where you run it correctly and unlock the potential that it has.
Right. That's good. And what's one of your greatest achievements in detailing?
The entire thing, from starting my own business and making that successful, buying a house in San Diego, going to work for a chemical company, getting recruited by another chemical company, helping grow that. The whole shebang, doing this podcast right now. I mean, I feel so, every day I wake up and I'm just like, I cannot believe I'm going to sit in my house with my dogs, talk to people on the telephone, on the computer, help people work on their stuff. This year I'm also on the student advisory board for where I went to school, for the fraternity chapter. So I get to work with all of these young men too, and help kind of mentor them, which is just, again, you get to a certain age and you're right about there with me.
Right.
Where you, part of that, you want to start giving back, you know, some way. And that whole giving back and helping people build their business and helping, you know, helping guide people with the experience that you just rack up by the time you get our age.
Right. Exactly. And that's, you know, my thing. I have, you know, it's made me kind of step back, or not step back a little bit, but, you know, kind of taken me back a little bit, that, you know, I get a lot of people that'll reach out to me and, you know, hey, you know, I'd love to come and train with you. I'd love to do this. And I'm like, whoa. First of all, I'm still learning myself. But at the same time, I always tell people, like, listen, I might not know all the answers, but if I can help you, I'll help you. And you know, gladly reach out to me at any time. Like, you know, shoot me a message on Facebook Messenger. And sometimes, you know, I'll tell people, like, you know, look, here's my number, just call me. Like, this is too much, you know, texting kind of thing. So I like doing that too. I always feel like, wow, like me, you know, like, why is there somebody else you could reach out? But again, it's nice because it helps me. I feel like I'm being able to give back a little bit to all the people that helped me, you know, because if people wouldn't have taken my phone calls or answered my questions, I wouldn't be in whatever position I'm in today. So it's passing it on, so to speak.
And, you know, I've always found that whether I'm teaching somebody how to play a rhythm on a conga, or I'm teaching somebody something about detailing, it makes you learn every single time. When you have to slow down and think about the steps, well, I don't care if it's polishing a car or making a proper ad for social media, when you stop, think about the entire process, it's overwhelmingly good for both sides.
Right. And a Detail Solutions podcast would not be a Detail Solutions podcast, whether we're sharing it or not, without hitting you with the this or that questions. So you might not know the this or that questions, which is awesome, because I ask these ones every episode. I don't think you've listened to an episode yet with a this and that.
I do not.
So this was, I stole this idea from Sammy Hagar. I'll share that with you. I haven't really told a lot of people that. Sammy Hagar had his Rock and Road show on Access TV, TV show. And whenever he was interviewing people, he'd hit him with a this or that, Ford or Chevy, burgers or steak, things like that. So the key is to quick. Like, you don't think about it. It's quick answers. This or that. So I'm going to hit you with my this or that questions. So interiors or exteriors?
Exterior.
Rupes or Flex?
Rupes.
Windows, cleaning windows, or washing and folding towels?
Cleaning windows.
The cleaning windows one is slowly getting there. Sun shots or lighted shop shots?
Sun shots. I was mobile.
Good job. I love sun shots. And I'm not going to take anything away from a really good lighted shop shot. I think a really good lighted shop shot can really kind of give it that extra gloss to it. But to me, nothing beats a sun shot.
I learned a lesson. So like the very last car that I polished, Dustin Wharton, he's our Western regional manager. And he moved out here from Colorado and he bought my business. And the very last car that we did in business, he came to my house and I was still kind of training him to take over, and it was a black Camaro. And so he came over and it was hammered. We polished that car pretty much from about 9 a.m. till about 4 p.m. It looked great in the shop, in my garage. We had lights on it.
Right.
Pulled that thing out in the sun to get ready to coat it, and it was horrible. I had to call the customer and be like, you're going to have to leave this car tonight. And we just got rotaries and started from scratch.
Right. And that's, you know, being here in Florida, I'm very fortunate that we don't get a lot of, you know, miserable days. So I have that opportunity of both checking it in the shop and then pulling it out in the sun. A lot of times, even if I see some stuff in the shop, but I don't see it in the sun, it's kind of good enough for me. I'm not going to keep fighting it because I know that 100% of the time is where the owner's going to see it. They don't have garages like we have shops. They're not going to call me up and say, hey, Alex, I want to come hang out at your shop and look at my car.
Yeah. They don't have a 5,000 million, 100 billion, trillion lumen lamp that they're going to put on it either.
Exactly. So mobile or shop?
Mobile.
Really?
I was mobile my whole time.
Wow. Left Twix or right Twix?
What's that?
Left Twix or right Twix?
The candy bar?
Yeah.
I'm a lefty.
I'm like, that's what? The one that throws everybody for a loop because it's so, yeah. Wax or ceramic?
Ceramic.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
And then the most important question that I ask of all my guests, and I hope you kind of know it a little bit. Are you Team Alex or Team Noxie?
I'm going to have to say Team Alex. I've heard the name, but I do not. Funny enough, I just met you recently. And
right.
I that's a name that I've seen. I would imagine y'all have seen my name around too. But yep. Unbelievable that we don't know everybody.
Yeah, don't worry about it. Aaron Knox is nobody. You don't need to know who he is. some of your listeners might know who he is, but he's a nobody. Nobody. This is the only time I can talk bad about him, and it's good for me because everybody, I can't talk bad about him on my podcast because they all know who he is. That's what I got.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll kind of wrap it a little bit. We'll say a few detail solutions. Auto Spa and yes, Detail sir. Solutions podcast. Just look for this, you know, check it out. There's definitely plenty of time in people's life to listen to more than one podcast. There's going to be great information.
And we're available pretty much everywhere you can listen to podcasts. Spotify, Google Play, iTunes. Those are the three big ones that I know. There's like, we're on like nine platforms or hosts or something like that. I don't know them all, but
are you on Audible?
No, I don't think I'm on Audible.
If you go to Amazon, you go on Audible too. I just realized that I was like Googled my name and it came up on Audible.
Yeah, somebody was talking about that in one of the podcast pages that I'm in. But most of the replies that I read or the comments that I read said that not a lot of people go to Audible to listen to podcasts. They're looking for books or something, but that's good to know.
I want it to be everywhere, omnipresence. Right. And okay, so here's kind of my signature question. Tell me what to Alex Russell. Give me what your definition of success is.
So my definition of success is being able to be present as a husband and a father. The business side of it is great and fun, but if I can't be here and have that time with the family, then I don't feel like I'm successful. Because I'm putting off the most important thing or the most valuable thing in my life, which is my wife and my daughter. You know, I always tell people, that work, that home, or the life quality, you know, time is more important than being at the shop till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, because you just want to try and, you know, crank cars out. I'm a little bit older, so I don't want to destroy myself any faster than I kind of already have or am. So I'm not the guy that's going to do, you know, multiple cars a day or a week, you know, coatings and stuff like that. So yeah, success for me, or being successful to me, is being present here at home with my wife and my daughter.
Like it.
And I'll ask you my ending question, and I'll go tame for you, because I'm not sure how your bosses would take all of it. If any of my listeners want to reach out to you and learn more about Owner's Pride, or be able to talk to you and maybe learn a little bit more about how to run their business better, where do they find you? Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, TikTok? And I'll leave it there.
I'm on Facebook and LinkedIn. Dan Williams got no time for any more of the social medias. You know,
it's, I gotcha.
There, Facebook, LinkedIn, ownerspride.com. You can go to our website and click on Become an Installer.
Gotcha.
We got a lot of cool stuff cooking for this year. I'm super excited about. And
that's awesome.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Well, do me a favor real quick before we bounce off, for my listeners that maybe don't know a lot about Owner's Pride, myself a little bit. I, you know, since you reached out to me, I kind of looked at a little bit of it, but I was just so busy between when we first talked and now I haven't had a lot of time to just kind of sit down and digest it. Give me a little bit of a rundown of what products Owner's Pride carries. What do you guys make? What do you guys do? Things like that.
So we work in tandem with a couple of very large manufacturers, and we have a full, very well thought out line of professional detailing products. One of our things is we have professional products without the professional problems. So whether you're a DIY guy doing your car in your driveway, these products are going to be great for you, or a professional detailing business. And then we also have detailing tools. We're a distributor for Rupes polishers. We have ceramic coating. One of the cool things, and this is where I really hope the industry goes to in the future, a lot of companies have great products, but we have the only compliant warranty in the entire detailing aftermarket that's actually filed and approved for sale in all 50 states and Canada. It's properly adminned. It has proper insurance behind it. It's the only compliant, literally the only compliant warranty in the entire detail aftermarket.
Right. And that's one of the things when I listened to that first episode, you guys were talking about that. So just because I know, you know, the detailer snobs out there are just so used to a warranty being, you know, as good as the paper it's written on by most of these, you know, manufacturers. And again, I think you guys mentioned it in that episode is, you know, the first thing it's going to do is it's going to fall back on the detailer. Well, you guys didn't install it right. You know, you didn't do this right. You didn't do that right. So it's not, yeah, it's not our fault. Our coatings are the best. So how exactly does your warranty stand out up and above the typical warranty that us as installers are used to getting? Because I tell people, when people ask me how long the warranty is on the coating that I do, I tell them the minute they drive off the property, that's how long their warranty lasts. Because I don't know how they washed it. I don't know how they cared for it. I don't know, you know, anything beyond that. I do warranty my work if I did something wrong, but as far as the coating failing or whatever. So how does your guys' warranty hold up above and beyond the others?
Yeah, so our admin company is ECP, which they have a huge warranty program through dealerships. So we have our product that we match with one of their warranties. Again, filed and approved. It is really, if you were to pull up side by side or print out and look at our warranty, it's a legal document. Right. And there's a thing called the Magnuson-Moss Act from 1976, and it's kind of one of the things that was written to guide how warranties, you know, were put out. And then they're also in the Federal Trade Commission. So a real warranty with real insurance, you have to have claims every once in a while. If you have a product and you never pay out any claims on it, then it's not legal to sell a warranty, because there's no reason to sell a warranty if there's never a claim, for one thing. Having proper insurance, sometimes these companies will go out of business, right? And say you have a company that has 10,000 warranties that are live active warranties, and that company goes out of business. Where, if there's a warranty claim, where's that going to go to? It's probably going to fall back towards the detailer, which is could be terrifying. And, you know, every detail business, you know, they get all salty if somebody does not have a business license and insurance, and they have a shop, and somebody comes up and they're mobile detailing across the street, and they're just like so angry about it, right?
Right.
You know, if you, it's almost a similar thing. Now, I want everybody to be on the same level playing field. And just like the International Detail Association is trying to bring up the standards across the board, it's similar to that. I would like to see everybody tied into a real compliant warranty program. I think it would be huge professional for our industry. And it's the right thing to do.
Right. No, no. And it, you know, it should be, but.
And I guess maybe I skirted around. So we cover everything that it says that we cover on the warranty.
Right.
So if your car gets water spots, we're going to pay, you know, one time per panel per incident to get that thing fixed for you. So we pay our installers. And if the installer doesn't do it, because our interior covers rips, burns, and tears. If you sit down with a knife in your pocket and poke a hole in your seat, or the cherry falls off your cigarette while you're, you know, driving and burns a hole in the seat, that's covered on our interior warranty.
Oh, wow.
Now, we know that the detailer doesn't do that work, but being as how we have a real admin company, we have service centers that can go to in all of Canada and all of the United States. And you just make a 1-800 number, and they walk you through the claim process, and they send, you know, they send you to the proper place for your repair.
All right. Oh, that's nice. Yeah, because that's the one thing. And you know, I guess it's kind of, how do I say this without maybe hurting feelings? Because that's the one thing in this industry. You can't hurt people's feelings. You know, so in an industry that is very unregulated, I mean, literally anybody can jump into it. You did. I did. Yep. Probably everybody did. And I know that's the thing that the IDA is trying to do, is they're trying to have better regulation, have everybody accredited, things of that nature. But that's kind of the thing, right? So the way that I feel is you guys are kind of taking that step forward with that, Whereas all these other companies that quote unquote might have a bigger name than Owner's Pride, are kind of like, you know, the unregulated company, because they're not taking that initiative to have a legit warranty and not at the end of the day fall back on the detailer. Well, how many sprays of alcohol wipe did you do? Oh, one? No, you had to do at least two. We can't cover it now, you know. Oh, you did two? No, it needed to be three. You know, or whatever the example would be, kind of thing. Yeah. So no, I mean that's a good deal. I mean, I definitely commend you guys for taking that step forward.
And it costs money. I tell you what, if we did not have a real warranty, we'd probably be a lot more profitable. But in my opinion, if you want to do business, you set it up right, you play by the rules, and you set yourself up for the long haul.
Right, exactly. And does your guys's warranty or whatever fall into Carfax? Because I know
absolutely. A lot of people are... Okay. As well, we have the only fully transferable warranty. So if you buy a warranty from us and it's a 7-year term, you sell that car in 2 years, it's listed on Carfax, and you send a check for $35 to the admin, and they will transfer this remaining part of that warranty to the subsequent owner.
Oh, that's good.
So when you're selling ours, you're selling value as well.
Right. Because that's the one thing I know. Like, I've had a couple of people come to me, you know, hey, look, I'm selling the car. I want a ceramic coating. I'm like, well, why do you want a ceramic coating if you're selling the car? You know, and they're like, I can sell it for more. And I had a guy do that. He had a specialty 718 Boxster. Like, 1 year they only made so many of this one style. And he just did a basic 2-year coating on it just so he could list it with a ceramic coating. And he was able to get more money than what he paid for me to do the job on. Awesome. just because he said he had a ceramic coating on it.
That's selling value.
That's what the Porsche collectors are looking for.
You know, they have very heavy regulation in the dealership world because there's so much more money in it.
Right.
But the entire warranty game that everybody's playing, especially when they know that they're playing it, it's a house of cards. And someday, somewhere, some customer is going to get pissed off and file a complaint. And then it's going to be amazing. So I hope that we can help everybody be compliant, you know, in the long run. And we just like really raise the standard, because this, as I keep saying, this is my hedgehog concept. This is where I'm supposed to be, and whatever I can do to help make everything more professional and better for both the customers and the detailers. Awesome.
No, that's good. I mean, I as a detailer, I appreciate that there's somebody like you, you know, in that role, because again, you know, I hope I don't hurt any feelings, but I feel that a lot of people that are kind of in that position are, you know, they're just more about the sales, you know. Oh, well, as long as somebody's buying from me, I don't care if they're doing a shitty job with it or they're selling it for way cheaper than everybody else in their market or whatever. They're buying, you know, and they're, you know, not every company does that, but there are, you know, and so it's nice that, you know, somebody like you, you know, is trying to be that middleman for all of us, so to speak. And I wish there were more people like you in the industry with the companies dealing with the detailers and making sure everybody's kind of happy.
Oh, thanks, man. I'm 51 years old. I don't want to go anywhere else to work for the rest of my life. And take the next 14, 15 years, do my best to help raise this standards. And, I mean, that's actually our raise your standards. Help raise the standards of our whole industry. And, you know, that's the mark I'm leaving. Make a lot of great friends along the way and great connections.
Oh, yeah.
I'm glad that we finally sat down and talked, you know?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, it was, you know, very kind of out of the blue that you reached out to me about doing this. But I was, you know, like, you know, again, like, me? Really? Like, but
yeah, everybody's but it's great, as relevant man. As the next guy.
No, I know, but no, it's great, you know, because I think it's definitely a way for us to kind of, you know, brain farting right now. What's the term? Cross promote.
Yeah.
You know, because my people will be able to find out about your company and your podcast, and your listeners will maybe venture over to my podcast and give me a few more listeners. So my new sponsor will be happy with the money he's paying me.
Perfect. Well, Alex, so, oh, go yeah. ahead.
No. I was going to say, I don't have anything else.
Yeah.
Other than, my new sign off is, more shine and less shade. That's my goal for this year. I saw that on a t-shirt and I thought it fit perfect with this industry, with the whole shine. And there's always, you know, kind of that, you know, trash talking. So my goal this year is, and I put it out on my podcast as kind of the, you know, the end thing is let's have a little more shine and a lot less shade.
I like it, man. Well, thanks for taking some time out of your day to be on the Owner's Pride /
Detail Solutions Auto Spot. Or, I messed it up. The Detail Solutions Podcast.